Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Obviously, with all my different stops and different coaches I've worked for, have picked up a lot of different stuff along the way. And, you know, was fortunate enough when I did go to West Plains to have a head coach that was, you know, allowed me to be very hands-on, allowed all of us assistants to be very hands-on in all aspects of the program. And so was able to kind of implement a lot of ideas that way. Which I feel like really did help in preparing me to be the head coach here at Iowa Western.
Hello, and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Boost Analytics. Boost is a one-of-a-kind technology company that provides NBA-caliber analytics and video analysis to select number of men's and women's Division I basketball programs. Boost uses artificial intelligence and natural language technologies to make analytics more user-friendly and to translate complex data into easy-to-read coaching insights. The Boost platform was built by data scientists and the basketball experts with decades of experience at both the collegiate and NBA levels. To learn more about Boost and how your team can gain a competitive edge, head over to their website at www.boostsport.ai and join the fastest-growing team in college basketball analytics. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, we have a special guest, a really good friend of mine today on the podcast, Coach Chad Van Reesen, the head coach of Iowa Western Community College. How are you doing, Coach?
Doing great, Bender. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for asking, sir. We are excited to have you on, man. Give us a little insight. So you're the head coach at Iowa Western right now, and your journey is not your typical fashion of you played college baseball and did some other things and in the high school side. So kind of walk us through how you became the head coach at Iowa Western and your basketball journey.
Yeah, it all started my junior year of college when I was the freshman girls coach and varsity assistant for PCM High School. I was actually sitting in a class, and the professor said they were looking for a coach, and it was something that I was going to pursue, you know, after graduating from college. So got into it a little bit early, and you know, I had 2 years of a really good experience taking PCM to their first two state tournaments on the girls' side, and then from there I was able to get a head high school job at Putnam County High School in Missouri, and was the head high school coach there for 3 years. Again, was lucky to have some really good players and one of the best players in program history play for us and had a lot of success. And then really was very fortunate from there to make the jump into college as a graduate assistant for Steve Tapmeyer at Northwest Missouri State. Coach Tapp, you know, I'd been there a long time. If it wasn't 20 years, it was close to 20 years at that point in time as the head coach. And I actually had to pay my own way to kind of earn my spot as the basketball graduate assistant the second year. But my first year, you know, I paid my own way the first semester, and I was actually got like my tuition and a stipend through the rec center. You know, I had to do basketball and whatever intramurals they needed me to run that way. And then obviously Coach Tapp retired, and Ben McCollum, you know, was named the head coach, who's the current head coach there, and worked for him for 2 years. And so really had a great time, you know, working for two, you know, phenomenal coaches that just was able to learn what college basketball is all about, you know, from a culture standpoint and a success standpoint of how you live it day to day. And then I was lucky enough to move on to the junior college level. You know, I wanted to pursue, you know, coaching a little bit higher level player. And obviously I love the junior college level. Once I got there, just the recruiting aspect and just the development aspect with having freshmen and sophomores and being able to be a part of their stories to move on to Division I programs or four-year programs across the country. So I spent 5 years at Missouri State West Plains, obviously working with you and working for the head coach, Yancey Walker. And then I obviously made the move up here to Iowa Western. Was the assistant coach for 4 years under Michael Johnette, and then obviously was named the head coach 2 years ago. Like I said, the rest is history.
Have some good history there, and you know, I enjoyed my 1 year with you at Missouri State West Plains. You taught me a lot in the recruiting aspects of basketball and you know, kind of helped me get my feet wet with learning how to talk to recruits and how to do things over the phone and ask impactful questions. And, you know, a lot of people ask me like, hey, how did you learn so much about recruiting and different things? And I credit you a lot. So give us a little insight. You know, you've been at the junior college level and at the Division II level. You know, give us some of your, you know, philosophies that you have within recruiting, especially at your level where you don't do a lot of in-person recruiting. You do a lot over the phone. Talk to us a little bit about some of your impactful questions that you ask and how you do your homework and research and analyze, you know, what player can do what based off a lot of highlight films.
Yeah, I think, you know, to start out with what you mentioned is just really the conversational piece that you have, whether it's through talking or text. I think it's really important to, number one, connect with the kid. And I think how you do that is you make them feel comfortable. And one of the ways that I've been able to do that is just try to ask them a lot of questions about the things that they would enjoy talking about. And so they can open up to you that way and feel comfortable, you know, gain that connection over the phone so you can build that relationship from that the first couple conversations. There are some, you know, key things that I typically look for as far as within my first conversation with a recruit or, you know, parents or whoever's helping them, whether it be a coach, high school coach, AAU coach, whatever. You know, the first thing is I want to know what they're looking for. You know, what are the aspects or the things that they're really looking for in a program to play for? And obviously that can be very general. It can be very specific, but I think that really gives you some insight of what things that player wants, what things that do you need to hit on within your conversation with them that ties into those points. The next thing I want to know is like, who's helping them make the decision. I think as you recruit quite a while in college, you figure out, sure, everyone will say the kid has a decision and is going to make the decision. But a lot of times there's some influence from, you know, again, parents, coaches, you know, mentors. So again, having an understanding of who's helping them with that decision so you can now make those calls, make those connections with those people to help, you know, again, build that relationship and let them find out everything about you, you know, your program, and just move you closer to getting to that player. And then finally, I always thought it's important to know who you're going against, you know, who you're recruiting against. So I always wanted to know like what other schools were talking to them. I know some people get kind of scared off if they don't hear that they're being recruited by anybody. I was never that way. I always wanted to feel like it's my job to judge and evaluate and bake, you know, based off of what they could do and what I saw, whether they fit within our program or not. But again, I just also didn't want to waste my time. You know, I've worked for programs at different levels, and you know, sometimes if you hear four or five different schools and you're like, I don't know, you know. And again, like I work obviously with Iowa Western, you know, we're a junior college that has been known as one of the top junior colleges in the country, you know, so we were able to get a lot of guys. But again, you're not going to beat out some of the top tier junior colleges for every single kid. So you have to kind of be realistic about it a little bit too. So again, I just try to build the relationship, find out as much as I can. You know, within the asking questions, I really try to listen to answers and not just what they're saying, but again, how they're saying it. And I think there's a way of asking kind of open-ended questions and where you can get an idea and a mindset of a recruit, of a player. So, hold on, Ben, I'm trying to think of a good example. I just do it on the fly. So an example would be, like, I'll ask a kid, usually in the first conversation, what's his favorite high school moment in his career? And based off of if he's going to say it's a 40-point game or if it's a game when he won a state title as a sophomore, it's going to determine it from my standpoint whether he's more focused on scoring in himself or if he's more focused in on the winning aspects, if he has those two things built into his career. So again, his answer gives me some insight of what potentially his mindset could be as a recruit, as a player. So again, I try to ask those kind of open-ended questions to learn more about them. Obviously, recruits are going to be very excited to tell you about, you know, their highlights or the things that stand out to them the most. But that's just one example of some of the things that I try to do to learn a little bit more about them. And again, why, you know, again, at the Division I level or even Division II level, you're going to be able to get to see that player, meet with that player multiple times. in the junior college level, at the junior college level, you're not going to have those same opportunities. You might get to meet with them on a visit or go to a home visit. You might have, you know, a lot of conversations with them, but it's usually not as long of a period of a recruitment as it would be at the four-year level. So again, I just think the more you can gain with an understanding of that player, where he's coming from, the program he's coming from, you know, all those different things, I think make an impact on what you can find out on that player. As far as, you know, just other, I don't know, what else did you ask me?
Yeah, on top of the question. So I'm going to touch on those quick and then I'll kind of finish the second part of that question. But, you know, one thing that you said, I asked a similar questions and I've kind of added to it a little bit. One is, hey, when are you looking to make your decision? Because so much in timing matters, especially at my level when I'm trying to visit kids. Like if a kid says I'm not going to decide till March, but he's asking to come on a visit in November, it's kind of a little bit complicated in the timing of all those types of things. And, you know, like you said, some people are appalled by the question of, hey, who else is recruiting you? Like to see who else, are you good enough? Like who's, you know, different things. And you have to spend your time wisely. But going off your question of what are you looking for in a school, you find out a lot about kids in terms of substance too. Like, do they actually know what they want? And, you know, you find out more about, you know, what type of character the kid is, how deep of a thinker he is. Can he answer these questions? Does he even know? And, you know, those things are really important, especially when you're trying to build a culture and a program of, hey, building leaders or doing certain things a certain way. There's certain kids that may be able to run things better or, you know, from an intelligence standpoint and impactful question standpoint, and then asking questions of who's helping them. You know, sometimes you figure out, oh, well, you know, that person's handler isn't, you know, the best person to deal with at times. Sure. So you kind of learn, you know, what works, what doesn't, and things like that. So on top of those questions, from a recruiting aspect, you've had, you know, you've really developed players, but you've also signed some really good ones. You know, what are some other tricks or trades that you've kind of found yourself that you do or maybe different? And you talked about, hey, I may only see you once or twice. So how do you stand out when it comes to recruiting?
The main thing that I try to do is really just try to pay attention and really just through building the relationship, try to, you know, see what things I can do to make them know that they're going to be an impact. Like how, like make them feel like they are a priority for me to recruit. And again, I think there's lots of different ways you can do that, but kids can kind of sense when you're being real, when you're being fake. And, you know, I'm always a big believer in being honest, probably too honest at times with guys, but I think there's a way to be honest and be positive. I think sometimes people think, well, honesty is can be a negative thing. Well, no, you're just, you know, shedding light on how it will be. But again, for the most part, you know, kids who want to be really good, who want to be great, they want to be pushed, you know, so they want to know how, you know, you're going to push and develop them and all the little things that go into it. But again, for me, it's just really finding the little ways that you can gain that edge. And again, I think the main point that I try to hit on is the things that they're looking for. You know, I think a lot of people try to sell things that the kids aren't looking for, and they're not going to accept that. And I do try throughout the process, try to check back with them and say, you know, hey, I know this is important. This is important. Is there anything else, you know, that, and then sometimes they'll mention something new, but a lot of times they'll go right back to the first two or three things that usually, you know, I write down during my conversation with them. And those are the important aspects. So again, it's kind of like as a player, play to your strengths. So again, I'm going to play to those, you know, two, three, four things that they mention. And, you know, explain to them how we fit with those top things that they're looking for. And that's probably been the ultimate way that I've had the most success with recruiting.
Yeah, you mentioned like the word listening. And so many of us as coaches, we want to talk. And instead of asking good questions and listening to what they actually say, we just word vomit all over our recruits, sure, especially early on in conversations. And I think that I do the same thing. So at the end of a visit, I circle back to our first conversation and I'll say it, you know, you said, hey, so-and-so and so-and-so are your most important people in making your decision. Well, guess what? They're sitting right here on this couch with you. You know, talk about, you know, the aspects of, hey, you value the education playing as a freshman and you want to transition from a four-man to a three-man. Well, this is how we're going to do those three things. This is how we're going to use you as a freshman. You know, here are the three people leaving at your position, you know, all those types of things to hit home on the stuff that they value. And I think that's really important instead of just forcing it upon guys like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, something else to add is, you know, it's kind of cliche, but you got to be real. You got to be yourself. I mean, if you're trying to be somebody else, they can see through that. They can hear through that. You know, one other thing that I think with recruiting, like you said, you develop kind of things to ask in your way and your approach. You know, one other thing I'll share with you that I try to ask kids towards the tail end of the first conversation is, what stood out to you the most about what I said? And again, that's a little bit of a question that I'm tricking the kids, because I'm trying to see what they were listening to or what stood out. You know, were they listening at all? You know, some kids will just, they won't have anything to say. Well, then they obviously weren't very, you know, interested or engaged. So they're telling me, you know, the answers to all the questions that I already, you know, need to know. So again, that's something that I've started to do here the past couple of years. First question, hey, what stood out to you the most about Iowa Western, about what I talked to you about tonight? And again, a lot of times they'll say, well, what you talked about with development or what you talked about with the facilities. But there again, you're also able to hear like what's intriguing them. So again, now when my next conversation, whether I'm texting them, you know, I can send, you know, pictures or proof of those things. And that's the other thing I think, you know, I always try to back it up with pictures or graphics, you know, so it's just not words. I think, you know, a picture can say, you know, 1,000 words, and obviously having guys move on to the next level, developing guys, showing them pictures of those guys, highlight videos of those guys can all help within that process as well.
Yeah, those impressive graphics that you make, and then you go ahead and send them on, you know, hey, what impressed you by the graphics? What do you think of those? And you're good. You're like, oh man, we got some work to do with this kid. But that's a common thing, is just finding, you know, the words that they use and what they find impactful. And, you know, it helps us become better recruiters too, because maybe we could need to do a better job of explaining what it is that we think is important to hit on those different things. So when we worked together at Missouri State West Plains, it was 2012-13, I believe, or 13-14 maybe. And, you know, when I would come over to your house, you had notebooks and notebooks of loose leaf paper, and it would be like stacks, like all the way up to the ceiling of plays and different things. You know, you've been a really diligent student of the game. And then you mentioned Ben McCollum, who obviously is, you know, one of the most successful coaches at any level, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, where he's won 3 national titles at the Division II level. What type of stuff have you learned from him and are continuing to learn from him? When you do have conversation, I know you went to practice this summer, that you can share that he does different or that you've implemented within your program.
Well, the number one thing as far as X's and O's that I've learned from him are just the details involved with ball screens. And, you know, he was very on point with everything that he wanted to teach. And obviously I was able to learn all those little details that, you know, a lot of the things he's still teaching today. So that has been a huge impact. The one thing I will say is with Coach Mack, he's a great developer, just of people in general. He naturally finds ways to challenge you. He naturally puts you in positions, regardless of where you are in the staff or on the team, to get you to develop and do more. And, really, I've never, you know, worked for a coach that naturally did it like that. So I think obviously that's a huge part of his success, because when you see yourself or feel yourself getting better, you obviously want to do more. And you obviously that builds your confidence, whether it is as a coach or a player. So learning that aspect has been huge as well. You mentioned, you know, all the different notebooks and stuff that I have. I mean, he studies the game like crazy. You know, he watches tons of film of his opponents. You know, again, he earns it. You know, I mean, he's doing scouting reports and watching hours and hours of film. I mean, you can read the articles. I mean, he's learning anything and everything that he can. And so that's kind of where I picked that up as well. The other thing that I really appreciated about, you know, Coach Mack is he wasn't about like doing it a certain way. He was about doing it the right way. So, you know, he always told us like he wants us to be honest with him. You know, if we have an opinion about something and we think we can, you know, make it better or build on something, then he wanted us to bring that up. Now, obviously there's going to be a conversation that follows. But again, like he was never afraid to talk things out. He was never afraid of an idea. Because again, there are lots of good ideas. And a lot of times I think in basketball, college basketball, people just do stuff because it's always been done. And I think that's some ways that, or one of the ways that he's really challenged himself is he's kind of learned and developed his system, you know, based off of ball screens, but now he's doing a lot of other things to put his players in positions to play to their strengths. And so there's a lot that I could talk about there with working for Coach Mack, and just obviously the influence and impact that he had on me. But again, as far as an X's and O's and just understanding of the game, you know, lots of people will talk about like the sophistication of his system. It's actually pretty simple. And I know it might not look simple, but it is really simple. He's finding like very simple ways to implement what looks complex. And again, maybe it's just because of my understanding of a little bit of his thinking, but again, that's constantly evolved, you know, just from my conversations with him and seeing him grow and be successful, you know, at Northwest.
Take what the defense gives you, right? It's that simple.
Yeah, kind of.
So that's awesome to hear your personal stories with him. And, you know, like I kind of poke fun with all the notebooks and different things, but you taught me a lot about the game of basketball and to see it different and, you know, just different things that, you know, people wouldn't understand necessarily, especially at the junior college level and running your program like a 4-year and different things because of your background. Talk to us a little bit about, so, you know, you're a junior in college and you're a head coach at the high school level, then you're a GA, then you're, you know, an assistant coach for eight years at the JUCO level, and then finally get to run your own program again. You know, what have you done that's similar? What have you drastically changed? You know, sliding over one chair, people talk about it a lot of like, hey, you know, the 18 inches is a lot of, you know, change, and people don't understand like the level of care and the level of work that goes in. And, you know, us as head coaches, like we both really like to recruit. Well, we don't always have time to recruit the way that we want to, or, you know, we both spend a lot of time with scouting and watching film. Well, there's sometimes not as much time as a head coach when you want to do that. So talk to us a little bit about the adjustments that you've taken from, you know, your first run as a head coach at the high school level to now and what you kind of learned in between and what you've taken.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, as far as my head coaching time at the high school level, you can apply a lot of the things that will make you successful at the college level. But it is the two levels are drastically different just because of the amount of time that you spend with players at the college level. Again, you're spending so much time with them week to week, day to day. That's the biggest difference from a high school to college standpoint. But there's a lot of things that, you know, I did as a high school coach that I've carried over. Obviously, with all my different stops and different coaches I've worked for, have picked up a lot of different stuff along the way. And, you know, was fortunate enough when I did go to West Plains to have a head coach that was, you know, allowed me to be very hands-on, allowed all of us assistants to be very hands-on in all aspects of the program. And so was able to kind of implement a lot of ideas that way, which I feel like really did help and prepare me to be the head coach here at Iowa Western. With that being said, learned way more than I thought I would last year as the first year head coach. I mean, like you said, I was an assistant for 9 years at the junior college level. I mean, I'm sure there's guys who've been assistants for a longer period of time than that. But again, you would think you'd have most of it figured out by then. And it is drastically different. You know, just as far as the decision-making, as far as recruiting and you know, knowing who you're bringing into the program, deciding on, like you're talking about building relationships, I think it becomes a little bit more natural as an assistant because you're around, you know, your players a little bit more on a day-to-day basis. So I think the relationship piece, you have to find different ways to connect, whether it's individual meetings, whether it's just, you know, pulling them aside in practice before or after, during. You have to find little ways because you're not around them as much. But again, there's tons of things that I've learned. I mean, ultimately everybody within your program is relying on you to make decisions that are going to help them succeed. And so again, you're coaching your coaches, you're coaching, you know, your players, you know, and then your coaches are coaching the managers. And so there's all these different things. And so obviously there's a lot to juggle, and you think you understand it as an assistant, and you usually do have an understanding, but until you're into it, you don't know how it actually is and feels. So obviously the first year you learn a ton, as you know, I learned a ton and made a lot of adjustments after my first year. And I feel like have really helped me. You know, the one thing I will say that is a big Northwest thing that I've, you know, carried throughout my coaching career is just the, you know, be accountable. Always be looking for ways to make yourself better. And that's, you know, something that, you know, I feel like if you are willing to do those things, you are going to get better as a coach. You're going to help make your program better. I think a lot of times we want to blame players for not being good enough. You know, again, there's lots of times when, you know, we're in Mac's office at Northwest and where so-and-so is not doing this and so-and-so is not doing that. Yeah, it's our job to make them better. I mean, that was the mentality. So find ways to make them better. Film, workouts, whatever we need to do, extra time before or after practice. You know, it's our job and our responsibility, you know, to make them better, not get frustrated with them. You know, again, they're not there yet. You know, again, what's delayed is not denied. So again, to constantly stay on that approach, I think you can use that as a coach as well. You know, constantly look at yourself. Are you, you know, handling substitutions well? Are you handling game situations well? Timeouts? You know, all these different things. There's all kinds of dynamics that go into, you know, winning success day to day in practice and in games. Are you doing those all the time, or are you just picking and choosing of when you're feeling at your best? Because again, as the head coach, you really don't have the opportunity to have bad days, even though we have them, you know, and when you do have them, you gotta rebound quick and get back on your feet and get ready to go. Cause again, everybody's relying on your decisions, your approach, your outlook every day.
Like you said, that your jump from year one to year two, like you've obviously made tremendous growth. You know, you've taken a program that, you know, was around that 500 mark, maybe a little above, and you know, you're now you're a top 10 team ranked in the country. You're off to a great start, 13-3, and you know, I know you've worked for it. Your behaviors have come before your success, and hopefully it continues, and you keep up the good work this season, and finish the job. You whenever you give me a call, you know, you're still in my favorites. You know, you're like one of 11 people in there. Congratulations. But like, so when your name pops up in my phone, I know I'm going to be forced to think. You know, sometimes we talk and we talk for 10 minutes or whatever, and you know, ask a couple questions here and there, small talk. But then there's always a basketball question or two. They're like, how would you guard this if they're doing this? Or what do you say when they're doing this? Or, you know, no specific examples. I struggle with that at times too, but you always have basketball questions. And where, you know, when you're studying the game and different things, a lot of coaches are kind of like timid of asking other coaches questions about, you know, different things and such. So talk about where that comes from, and, you know, who do you bounce a lot of ideas off of, and where do you come up with these different questions and how to guard or different things that you kind of overthink at times. But at the same time, yeah, you ask good questions, so you always make me think.
Yeah, I don't know. I just have always been kind of a person who's really wanted to study the game and learn as much as I can about it. And it's just always interesting to me to hear different approaches. You know, I just think that knowledge is power. And if you have a way of defending something, if you have a way of countering a defense, and all of a sudden that clicks, then your players are going to be more confident in you. That's going to give your team more confidence. So that's just always something that I've been drawn to as a coach, is to learn, to be hungry to learn as much as I can. And, you know, obviously with the people that I'm closest with, I typically ask those questions a lot more. There is a lot of different ways to be successful offensively, defensively. And so again, there's no right or wrong way of doing anything. It's just a matter of if it fits with your team and can allow you to play to your strengths. So I'm trying to learn and then trying to get ideas. And sometimes you can implement something. Sometimes there's no use for it. And that's fine. But again, I just think the more you can think and process, the better coach you become. Because again, you're going to be put in situations like you're talking about. You might have to guard a certain player one way when he's coming off all these different screens. How are you going to guard that? Or are you going to guard ball screens a certain way? Well, again, as you know, when you're going into a game plan situation, how are you going to make those decisions? You know, and is it really what's best for the team to completely switch your ball screen defense? you know, going into that game? Or is it better to just make a little adjustment on one guy, you know, or do something a little bit different on a couple guys? So I think, and then to build off of that, you learn how you would implement something. Like, how do you teach it? You know, if you're going to do something new, you really need to know the details, you know, because at the end of the day, you can have an idea, but people who have had success with it, they know the reasons that make it successful, and they know the reasons of how to beat it and how you get beat doing that. So again, if you can find out those little details of what makes it successful, now all of a sudden you can have an advantage based off of other people's experiences. You can become a head coach that knows and has answers without actually running something by trusting and understanding it through somebody else.
Right. And you do that a lot with scouting too, if I remember correctly, like, hey, figure out what's the hardest things to guard and then put those in your offense, you know, and, you know, different things that you've done over the years. And, you know, I'll never forget when I first, you know, watched you do scouts and, you know, I came from different places and saw different things and, you know, you would go out there and you wouldn't even have a piece of paper with you. And I was like, holy smokes, like I need to get on this level. And, you know, now I feel like I'm at that level where I go out there and I can kind of, you know, even if one of my assistants is running a play, I'd be like, are you sure that the guard wasn't, it doesn't make sense if they run it that way or whatever. But no, I learned a lot from you and I'm really appreciative of that, especially in the basketball perspective. So give us maybe one example on both sides of the ball of something that you guys may do that others may think is weird or different or uncommon, that maybe that you've done or trial and error that you've stuck with. And don't want to give away all your secrets because we don't want to blow that 13-3 record. But you know, tell us one thing maybe on the offensive side or defensive side that you've kind of implemented or tried that you're like, this really works or really messed people up.
Yeah, well, I think from the standpoint of trapping the post defensively, you know, it's something that we implemented this year for the first time, and I've done it in the past with my time at Northwest with Coach Tapmeyer. But again, I think what it has kind of made me realize more is it's a changeup. Like, lots of people don't do it. And I know there's lots of people who say, well, the game isn't being won in the post. But it's, for us, it's creating a lot of turnovers. Like, those guys, they see it coming. They're throwing the ball away, you know. And it, again, it's just like a built-in trap that surprises them. And again, obviously, we have a timing aspect of when we're going and who we're trapping. So there's details built into it, and we're not trapping everybody. But again, I'm very surprised of how many turnovers we've been able to create from just trapping the post on post-ups. And again, we do play a little bit smaller right now with our team, so that was a strength for us to try to put pressure on teams to negate them just going one-on-one in the post, you know, on us. When we're playing a bigger guy, sometimes – you know, if we just let them go to work, then that's going to give them an advantage. But again, that would be one thing defensively. You know, from an offensive standpoint, you know, there's something that I'm kind of had an idea about and tried a little bit. We're popping, I would say, more or less non-shooters within ball screens at times, and not all the time. There's some rules built into it, and I know people are like, well, why would you pop a non-shooter? Well, again, I think it creates extra space. I think it creates, you know, when you have guys underneath the basket, I think it becomes very easy to help on drives. It creates clutter underneath the rim that can take away cuts and other things that can be open. So that's something that we've done in certain situations within our offense and have certain rules of when we come off, we're going to pop, and then we usually have a built-in action that now keeps us in a five out. So while you're in that five out, I know we don't have a shooter out there, but you still got to guard a single away, a double away after that guy, you know, gets the pop and swings it. And now the baseline's more open. So now we've distorted their help because their big isn't underneath the rim like they usually are on 80% of their help possessions. So again, just by bringing them out and popping them, you're removing them from their kind of the big safe zone just to help and put their body around the rim and protect the rim. And so there's different actions that we're doing off of that a little bit. And again, the cutting that we've done off of it has been huge because we get a lot of just simple cuts, and then the cuts open up other things as well. But that's something that we've kind of tried and implemented this year for the first time. I haven't really seen anybody else do it with non-shooters like that. Usually you're picking and popping a guy who is playing to his strengths, who can, you know, hit a perimeter shot. But for us, it's like, if you want to play big and back on the ball screen, that's fine, because that just gives my guards more ability to get downhill and attack. You're big if they're back, and if we can force them to go over the ball screen. But then also, like I said, if you're not going to close out, that's fine. When we pass and chase or pass and hand off, you're still back to give our guy an ability to turn the corner again or to get a cut off the weak side while that ball handler is going to the middle of the floor. So there's some different things that we've kind of experimented with that I like, that have given our team some advantages with, like I said, cutting and creating more space without having like true fours and fives that can just always stretch the floor.
Yeah, you talked about giving the ball space. That's like Ben McCollum, his biggest thing is, how can I give the ball space, more room? And we talked earlier in the year about cutting as being kind of a unique way of, you know, creates more space than even screening or anything else that you could possibly do. And you talked a little bit about trapping the post and just kind of having that trump card or something a little bit different. And one thing that I was talking to Coach Spiker over at Drexel the other night on the phone, and we were talking, and he's like, I'm primarily a man-to-man coach. And I was like, yeah, me too. Like, I think on Synergy, I'm at like 7 possessions of zone all year. Now, we have a couple random presses that we throw. But he's like, it's really important that you just do it to offset rhythm. Like, yeah, a lot of people focus on the last couple of possessions of a game where, you know, it's a one possession game. Well, maybe you stole that possession earlier. And so kind of going into what you were talking about with the trapping the post, well, maybe you're not trying to not let the guy score, but creating havoc, creating a turnover, making them think, especially at our level at the JUCO ranks, where the more we can make other kids think, the better off you are to, you know, do what you do best. Usually that's, you know, playing faster, you know, athletes, and making ways to get easier baskets, you know. And we did something a little different this year where we were trying to stop, you know, basically stop right-hand drives. And so many kids are so dominant with their right hand, and so we shade just a little bit to that right hand. And, you know, it's really helped because they think they got the left open and we're still in that gap. And yeah, it's not as good going left. It's just part of the basketball game at certain points. So taking a little turn, you know, with some other stuff. So, you know, you had played baseball and you coached high school, and now you're a head coach at college. And, you know, at the junior college level, you spent a lot of time at the small college level. For a guy that, you know, has sent a lot of players and, you know, didn't come from D1, doesn't have a famous last name, doesn't have all these things, what would you say about, you know, your kind of coaching journey? And what would you say to young coaches? And you said something about the Division II GA experience where you got to coach and recruit was invaluable to you. And, you know, just maybe talk about a little bit about small college, you know, being a head coach, you know, maybe why you coach, and circling back at your why. Because, you know, a lot of times we lose track of that, especially when things are a little bit more frustrating, not only in basketball, but in life. So just talk a little bit about, you know, some of your experiences at the lower college level and why you coach.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason why I coach is just to impact our guys, you know, be a part of their story and try to make them the best that they can be. You know, I've been very fortunate to maybe find some guys that weren't very highly recruited in high school, and you know, we brought them in on scholarship, and at the end of the day, you know, somebody rated them a D2 player in high school, and then all of a sudden they're going to a high major program or mid major program after 2 years. So, you know, just really, you know, building that relationship and giving them opportunities that they never would have gotten had it not been for the relationship and you being a part of, you know, their story and their development. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I just think those relationships and obviously having a passion for helping people get better and helping people succeed, you know, while they're with you and then after they move on, is really the most rewarding part of everything. You know, especially what we do at our level, you know, sure, it's great to have success and to win. But again, seeing guys move on to levels that they didn't think they wanted to, it was a goal, but did they really think they would get there after a year or two? That's definitely the most rewarding part, in my opinion, of our job in junior college. You know, as far as, you know, the small college thing, you know, I just think it comes down to your daily mindset and recruit and approach. and the habits that you built. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, I've always had a passion to learn and to work. And so, you know, it's just always like finding a way to outwork people. You know, that's been the, my main way that I've been able to do what I do, stay in it, and been able to make every step along the way in my journey. I just think if you outwork people, you're going to have success. You know, if you outwork people, you're going to beat people just naturally, because you've developed that discipline and those habits. But again, it's a lot of the little stuff. Like, you know, when, I mean, I was doing everything, you know, at the Division II level as a GA, you know, but I wanted to be involved in everything, not because I wanted credit for it, but because I wanted just to learn. You know, I wanted to learn of why we were successful at Northwest, why they were doing it this way, you know, all the little ins and outs, and then, you know, putting that all into motion with your daily work. That's been my biggest, you know, takeaway, as I've been a part of, you know, really good programs that, you know, thankfully had me in them, and I was able to kind of learn and take away something from everybody that I've been able to see that has allowed them to have success, and just really stayed persistent with it. And it really just comes down to your daily work ethic and your approach, you know, overall. I mean, and obviously I have had an opportunity to be pushed and developed by some really good coaches, that maybe other people, you know, didn't have that same, you know, coaching network or whatever. But again, other people have had a larger network than me. So again, just like a player, there's no excuses. Like, there's more coaching videos than there was ever before. You know, there's no excuse for you not to know something anymore in coaching. You should be able to talk to somebody, ask somebody. Again, as you know, and you're the best networker I know, Bender, you can find ways to talk to people if you start asking around for numbers. Again, you have to maybe get creative. But again, you can go to practices, you can watch stuff online, you can study stuff on Synergy and figure out a lot of different things, and then ask, you know, an assistant coach on staff, if they're willing to share, you know, a head coach, if it's at a smaller college level. You know, you can find ways to become more knowledgeable. You can find ways to be a better coach, just like as a player, you know, just like what we demand and expect from our guys. You can't expect anything less of yourself in that regard. So again, I think it just comes down to, you know, what you're willing to do day to day. You know, what are you willing to bring to the table? You know, your energy, your effort. You know, what are you focused on? Are you making your program better every day? And again, if you're doing that, you'll always get better. And then eventually, like I said, if you, you know, are part of programs that bring in the right guys and, you know, have players that will allow you to win, that success will just push you further to the top. But again, it's all about your daily approach and just having that focus and that mindset every day of, yeah, it's not going to be fun, you know, driving 6 hours to the airport to pick up a recruit, and then he stays one night, and then driving him back 6 hours one way, like we did at West Plains. You know, it's three hours one way to the airport, and then you get there and there's a delay, and then you sit in St. Louis for 3 hours, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's 2 o'clock and you got to get up, and then the next night, you know, you're not going to be back till 2 o'clock in the morning again. And then guess what? You gotta get back to work. Like, the weekend's over, you know? But again, like, you know, for me, for my mindset, it's like, well, we got to get up and get better. It's Monday. You know, everybody else wants to take it easy because it's the spring or the summer. Like you said, I've always had kind of the 4-year level approach of, you know, what are we doing day to day, you know, as coaches and as for our players. So again, that's probably been the biggest reason that I've been able to climb and continue to stay in it, because I think, you know, I went to a Rising Coaches event in Minneapolis, you know, and one of the speakers said, you know, the majority of coaches, they are going to get fired within their career. You know, you are going to have adversity. Well, again, you know, you got to be able to stay in it and do everything that you can not to be in those situations. But when they do, you know, how are you going to pull yourself out? And again, that's all the daily stuff. Just like you know, as a player, like, you just can't not have confidence because you had a bad day. Like, no, you got to be confident, be, you know, a good player, good coach, regardless of the situation that you're in. And you're building yourself for that every day.
Yeah, you made some really valid points there. And I'm going to ask you the next question. I'm just going to funnel right into it. So we had a conversation last year and you talked about an acronym called FACE. Mm-hmm. Focus, attitude, communication, effort. Just talk a little bit about that, because that kind of goes full circle with what you were just talking about. You know, you as a coach, that's just as important if not just your players, and how you kind of graded that, even though they're kind of subjective type scores. So talk to me a little bit about that real quick.
Yeah, you know, with all those aspects that you mentioned, you know, all those things are important, I think, with daily success. And, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, the kid having that 40-point game. You know, the recruit had a 40-point game. Well, I'd be willing to bet, like, if you graded his, you know, his focus, you know, his attitude, the effort in that game, and the energy, you know, all those different things, you know, that's what made him successful in that game. You know, so, again, one of the things that we try to do is really build our habits, you know, championship habits. And so, again, it's the things that are going to make them successful every day. You know, so we grade them early on in the preseason and in the year on those aspects, on those things that we feel like that are going to be the foundation for what will make them be, you know, good or great as a player. And then also that will help us as a team. And then there's two other kind of byproducts from that. Number one, there's the consistency factor. Sure, anybody can show up and get good scores a couple times a week, but can you do that consistently? You know, so can you go out on the tough days when you don't feel like it and still get really good scores and focus, you know, and communication and, you know, and effort? Can you get those scores that you're looking for? Or on your bad days, do you dip and your scores go way down? Well, that's not consistency. That's going to be the same thing like a player scoring 20 in one game and then going and scoring 3 the next game. And that's what makes us as coaches scratch our head. You're like, how can there be that big of a gap? So that's one thing that we really talk to our players about from a consistency standpoint is, you know, closing that gap. There shouldn't be a huge gap day to day, regardless of how you feel. Again, college athletes, you're practicing, playing, working out so much, you're not going to be at your best every day. You're not going to feel your best every day. But do you have then the next thing, the competitive edge and desire to actually get you to those levels on a consistent basis? And there's the competitiveness. And so I think as a college coach, I hear a lot of guys that I know and other coaches say, like, yeah, you know, I like our team, but we got a bunch of guys who just play. They don't compete. Well, again, we all want guys who compete. They're playing to win. They're just not playing. And so I think there's a difference between just getting through a practice and actually playing for something. And that's, you know, kind of been my approach is getting guys to focus more into, you know, those aspects that make them really good. And then the other things will happen. They'll shoot the ball really well because they are focused, you know. Or, you know, one thing we talk about a lot is, you know, when guys are running, you know, when we're running in sprints and stuff, you know, all of a sudden the gym gets quiet. Why? Because everyone's thinking about themselves. They're thinking about how tired they are. Well, how is that helping you run the next sprint? If you're thinking about how tired you are, how is that helping you make the next sprint? You're not doing yourself any good. That's not positive talk. Help your teammate out. Now, if you start talking to your teammate, you forget about being tired because you're trying to help somebody else out. So there's little things that, you know, mentally we're trying to do to separate. But again, can you condition yourself to do that when you feel like you're about to run to the can and puke? You know, yeah, that's the moment of truth, you know, but again, can you do those things all the time? And so those are the things that we try to focus in on, like you mentioned, with those, that little acronym with the focus attitude, you know. I don't know, better, you messed me up.
Okay, so baby, you got it. You're right there. No, what I love about it, so like on our wall in our locker room, we have a focus, attitude, and effort wall, and has pictures of what it looks like. And our job as leaders isn't to tell you what to do and do it. That's like the false you know, the false perception of what coaching really is. Oh, you do this and that and it'll work. Yeah. You do it because I'm the coach or I'm the parent. Like, that stuff doesn't work. It's 2022. Like, that doesn't work. You have to show them what it looks like. We have to model the way. And by making your core values, whatever they are. So, you know, in your case, like you talk about the controllable behaviors. You control, no matter how you feel, because what happens next can't be based on how you feel, your focus. You control your attitude. You control your communication. And we use the term championship talk, not necessarily positive talk. And there's reasons behind it, because like positive, like there's times for not negative talk, but talk that technically isn't positive. It's championship caliber type talk. And then the effort. Like if I have to coach effort every day, like that's not good. And by you scoring it, you know, you, your staff, and giving it to them and those types of things, is making it tangible, which means you value it. And if you can grade it, then it's providing value to your program, and it's getting what, you know, you think is important as a coach, and helps them in basketball, but it also helps them in life. Because if we go through our day, like a lot of people talk about, like, oh yeah, one bad moment ruins my whole day. Well, like, we all know these people that, oh, we had a bad day. You know, they had so-and-so in the cafeteria. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. You got to be able to get to the next play, the next most important thing. And I think that really helps us focus on what that is. What is the most important thing? What's the next best action we can take and go ahead and do it? So as we wrap up here, you know, are there any questions that I should have asked that I haven't? You know, you got the floor here, Rising Coaches Podcast. You've been to our stuff in Minneapolis. You claim that I'm a good networker, but, you know, Rising Coaches is a big part of what, you know, who I am. And, you know, I'm really appreciative of having this platform. But is there anything that, you know, you want to talk about or any questions I should have asked that I haven't?
No, obviously, you know me too well and did a great job. I mean, the one thing I would say is I've always enjoyed going to any of the Rising Coaches events. If you can get there, go. Number one, it's great to hear the content. The people that they have speaking are going to be very on point. You're going to learn a lot from them. I still have, you know, the notes, you know, from Minneapolis, which I heard great speakers. I don't know them off the top of my head because it was a couple of years ago. But again, that was just phenomenal content that I heard. And then obviously you're going to get to meet and network people, which I think is really big in this business, is having a network of people that you know and you trust. And again, just being able to find different ways to get information, find different ways to build relationships with others where you can ask them questions. Maybe they can help you out, you know, within a recruiting standpoint. Maybe there's a kid in their area that you can't go see. Or if you go see, it's going to be 12 hours, you know, 12-hour drive for a JUCO recruiting trip. That's fairly normal. Maybe you can call them up and you can get some answers on some things and be like, yeah, I don't know that that's worth, you know, a 24-hour round trip. So again, there's lots of benefits, I think, to all those different things. But again, I think that also kind of takes me back to the thing that I've always enjoyed about coaching, and that's just learning. You know, you can take two good ideas away, whether it's a philosophical idea, whether it's X's and O's, whether it's an out of bounds play, whatever it is. There's so many people doing so many good things, and to just think that what we're doing is like the best thing ever. Sure, it might be, but 5 years from now, nobody could be running that. You know, people might be playing defense completely differently. So again, I think it's always about adjusting too and developing and making sure that you are, you know, up to speed with what you're learning. And obviously, you know, the Rising Coaches, other coaching clinics, whatever way you can to get, you know, get extra content, learn different things, build a network, I think will always benefit you as a coach, regardless of the level that you're at.
Yeah, we always got to find, as coaches too, we talk about with our players, is we got to find ways to make ourselves feel uncomfortable and to challenge our ideas and not get in a rut, or just because this is, you know, you said it earlier, like, this is how it's always been done. It's like the most dangerous way of thinking. And so opening up those doors, utilizing platforms, learning as much as you can, meeting people, challenging the status quo of what's important, and you know, continue to develop your craft. And so I appreciate you being on tonight and sharing your wisdom with the world. And if you don't know who Chad Van Reesen is, now you do. And if you need to know who's out there, you know, recruiting, you know, Chad Van Reesen, great, great resource to ask who's out there, because the key to recruiting is that right there. Ask some powerful questions and remember your why, your purpose, and keep moving forward.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Bender. Good all talking right to you on video.
Hey, great, great, great focus today. Great attitude. Communications was elite, and your effort was pretty good tonight too, Chad.
Right? Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad I got good grades.
All right. See you later.
All right, have a good one, Bender.